Welcome to WRFG Atlanta, 89.3 FM on your dial. Next up, Alternative Perspectives, Atlanta's only queer radio hour. Hold on tight. And thank you so much for joining us. You are listening to WRFG Atlanta, 89.3 FM. Welcome to Alternative Perspectives. This is Atlanta's only local radio hour devoted exclusively to issues affecting Atlanta's queer community. I am your host, Greg Bossen. I'm definitely queer, and thank you so much for listening. Now, I should say the opinions expressed here are those of myself and my guests and do not necessarily represent the views of WRFG, its employees, board, volunteers, funders, or even listeners. Now, how's everybody doing? I hope you are doing well. We've had some beautiful sunny days, have we not? It's been great, actually. But on to more gay things. So, this show is about issues that affect Atlanta's queer community, but it doesn't mean that we wouldn't cover an issue because it affects other people besides the queer community. And I can't think of an issue that is more important to the gay community right now than what is happening with the divide that has occurred in this country between those who ally themselves with Donald Trump and who believe that the election was rigged, and that are QAnon supporters, and believe that that Democrats, liberals, media types, and movie stars are all together in cahoots running a secret sex trafficking ring for children, and they're also eating babies too. That's actually... some of them actually believe that. But anyway, these people are in Congress now. And there are certainly those in the United States Congress, Marjorie Taylor Greene being one of them from Georgia. But additionally, in our state Congress, there's a lot of people that believe that the election was rigged, or at least they're using that as an excuse to try and disenfranchise voters. It's very disconcerting to me. But anyway, I think that the real solution to all of this lies with the voters. And the country is so divided, we're not even listening to each other right now. And so what I want to do tonight is to talk about how we may bridge that divide. And I'm actually going to do this by bringing in a therapist by the name of Ulester Douglas, who is a psychotherapist here in Atlanta. And he specializes in something called imago work, where you practice with your partner. Usually it's used in relationships. When you have a disagreement with your partner, being able to listen, mirror, understand, and empathize with the other individual. You suspend your own belief systems and listen to what the other party is telling you, so that they can feel heard and understood. And it helps to bridge the gap. You don't have to believe what they're saying, but you need to at least listen and hear what they're saying and help them to feel heard and understood. And I think that's one of the reasons why we have all of these voters, because they haven't felt heard before Donald Trump. And so I thought it would be good for us to talk about how to do that, how to talk to these people and help them to feel heard in the hopes that at some point we can get them off the crazy train. Although I would never say that to an individual when I'm trying to mirror them and hear them. So that's what we're going to do on the show tonight. But before we do that...
News of the Queer.
I know that's right.
Oh, no, she didn't say what?
All right. And we're going to start with COVID statistics first. And things have been looking better around the country and here in Georgia. Our average 7-day average of cases is just under 3,000 cases a day, which is sounds like a lot, but actually it's down from an average of almost 10,000 cases a day when we were looking at the surge right after the holidays. So we have been going down steadily since then. However, I would be leery because in the last few days, it looks like we're ticking back up a little bit. So please make sure to wear a mask. I won't go any further than that. I just want to keep you aware of what's going on. Here locally, a Georgia health agency wants to expand the PrEP pilot program. PrEP is the drug that you take to prevent you from getting HIV. And the Georgia Department of Public Health wants $230,000 written into the state budget. The funds would expand a pilot program providing PrEP to those at risk of contracting HIV and to restore two positions dedicated to fighting HIV. GDPH Commissioner Kathleen Toomey requested the funds during a House Appropriations Health Subcommittee meeting earlier last month, February the 16th, and the money would be part of the state budget for fiscal year 2022, which starts in July. The PrEP program got $57,350 for its first year launch in Fulton and Towns counties. Toomey requested $85,650 to fund the program's second year, a 50% increase. The funding boost would expand the program to other counties. So hopefully this will happen. Earlier this month, Brian Kemp signed an amended 2021 fiscal budget that props up the AIDS Drug Assistance Program. Lawmakers added $15.44 million to ADAP's budget to avoid creating a waiting list for the program, which helps low-income people that are living with HIV. So it's good that we are getting some support for these individuals. Now, Cobb, DeKalb, Fulton, and Gwinnett have some of the highest rates of new HIV infections in the nation are targeted as part of a federal plan to end HIV/AIDS by 2030. Fulton County also has its own effort to end the epidemic by 2030. So I can't understand people having unsafe sex. I'm told that people that are younger take PrEP and then they assume everything is okay, or maybe they even don't take PrEP and they have unsafe sex anyway because, hey, everybody lives with HIV now. It's no big deal. Well, it's absolutely a big deal. So you don't want HIV. I mean, you can certainly live a full life with it, but you're on medication for the rest of your life. It's not something that you want to get. And as you get older, it may make it a little bit more harder to fight off certain other illnesses because it is an autoimmune disease, folks. So, all right. And then I want to quit here. I'm just going to do one more little piece of news. So I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but earlier last week, the House passed the Equality Act, which aims at ending discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity. This would be a national act that would make it illegal to fire somebody for being gay, deny them housing, deny them access to public spaces, just really any discrimination that applies to anybody that's considered part of the Civil Rights Act of 1965. This basically adds sexual orientation and gender identity to that act. I mean, that's ultimately what it's doing. It's a 1964 Civil Rights Act, not 1965, but it's called the Equality Act. The House first passed the Equality Act in 2019, but it wasn't going to pass because the Republicans were in charge of the Senate. But now the Democrats are in control of the Senate, and so it looks like it's probably going to pass. So we're very excited about that. I will tell you that one Republican freshman voted against it. Actually, a lot of Republicans did. I think there were only three Republicans that crossed. Let's see. The final vote was 224 to 206. Only three Republicans joined Democrats in voting for the bills. John Kotko, Tom Reed, and Brian Fitzpatrick. So I think it's worth noting their names. One Republican freshman who did not vote for it was our own, again, Marjorie Taylor Greene. a freshman from North Georgia. She's repeatedly come under fire for her controversial comments and has made a point of standing in opposition to this legislation. And even went so far, I'm sure you've seen this, but if you haven't, you should look it up. She posted an anti-transgender sign outside of her office because her office is directly across the hall from a lawmaker who has a transgender child. And that lawmaker has the transgender flag outside her office because her child is transgender. So this woman, Marjorie Taylor Greene, puts a sign up that says, you know, there's only two sexes, male and female or whatever. And it's just nasty. She filmed herself doing it and put it all online. And these are the people that are in office now. It's scary. But anyway, I think that should do it. And with that, we will be right back.
WRFG and the Carrie Steele Pitts Foundation celebrate Black History Month.
WRFG and the Carrie Steele Pitts Foundation recognizes Dr. Johnny L. Clark as one of Atlanta's great women, a leader in accounting, business, and education. She is a founding member of the AWSCPA of Georgia and a lifelong champion for diversity and inclusion. Among her many career milestones are service as an educator, a bank president, and dean of the Atlanta University Graduate School of Business. At the age of 83, Dr. Clark has seen immense change in the city of Atlanta. She became a fierce advocate for fairness and opportunity, striving to ensure equal rights and inclusion for all. She's a true leader and a shining example through persistence, determination, and sheer hard work. She earned the distinction of being the first Black woman to receive a PhD in accounting and business administration from the University of Georgia.
This has been another public service announcement from your station for progressive information, WRFG 89.3.
All right. I'd be shocked if anybody remembered this song. It was never really that popular. I thought I loved it. It was in the, I guess, the 90s. It was Round and Round by Tevin Campbell, who is, I don't know, most likely in the Where Are They Now file. Anyway, you are listening to WRFG Atlanta 89.3 FM, streaming at WRFG.org. And this is Alternative Perspectives. This is Atlanta's only local radio hour devoted exclusively to issues affecting Atlanta's queer community. Now, this particular show affects everyone, not just the queer community. And the reason why I wanted to talk about this, I should formally say that the Tonight Show and I'm Greg Boss and I'm your host, and thank you so much for listening. We are definitely at an interesting time in our country, which I'm sure you know. And really, we are more divided as a country than we have ever been. We're remarkably divided, not just with our political ideologies, but just with basic facts. And actually, I wanted to talk about that for a second. And I've always been someone who feels like in order to move forward, whether you're talking about a relationship or you're talking about a friendship or a group of friends or a community or a country, we want to look at resolving differences that are tearing us apart. I think everybody would agree that that's a good idea. Now, I've been in therapy on and off for, I don't know, it's probably going on 30 years now. And one of the most important tools that I encountered in resolving disagreements is something called an imago dialogue. And this is something that we talked about on the show before, but it's basically a way of resolving disagreements by listening to what the other person says, mirroring back to them, validating them, giving them empathy so that they feel heard and understood. And in that way, we can begin to resolve issues. It's many times used in therapeutic settings, in relationship therapy settings. But I'm interested to see how we might be able to use that to resolve this rift around the political discourse in this country, because it is definitely tearing the country apart, and it's happening at a macro level, and it's also happening at a micro level. I myself barely speak to my brother anymore, who is I guess he was a reluctant Trump supporter who is unclear as to whether or not the election was stolen. You know, we just disagree on the basic facts. And so I wanted to talk about whether or not we could do this. So with me on the show tonight, I have one of the two therapists who taught me about this Imago dialogue. His name is Ulester Douglas. And thank you. Ulester Douglas is a psychotherapist, but I wanted to at least make sure that you're here and that you can hear me and to see how you're doing today. So how are you doing, Ulester?
Hey, Greg, I'm doing well. Can you hear me well?
I can. You sound good.
All right.
I'm going to brag about you for a second.
All right.
Ulester is a licensed psychotherapist with probably nearly 30 years of experience at this point. He's a master social worker, a certified Imago relationship therapist. That's what I was referring to. And former National Institute of Mental Health fellow. And he also teaches as an adjunct professor at Emory University. And he is a sought-after thought leader on topics ranging from violent social justice and their intersectionality, and has become and has been on the cutting edge of theorizing how systematic factors contribute to emotional wellness and shape interpersonal and international media. So he's been on CNN, the New York Times, National Public Radio, and he's on Alternative Perspectives tonight. So thank you so much for joining us. And I guess what I wanted to start by saying, I guess I'm going to give a couple of statistics here. And this is from...
Greg, may I interject right before the statistics so that I don't forget? Everything you just mentioned is correct in the intro. One adjustment, I'm no longer adjuncting, if you may, at Emory. I did it for about 4 years, but I'm not currently there. I think it's important to note that. So.
Okay. All right. Sorry about that. Yeah. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you for the correction. So, all right. Now, you. This is a poll, Ulester, that came out just the other day. It was a USA Today Suffolk University poll, and they surveyed 1,000 voters who had previously indicated that they were planning to vote for Trump in the elections upcoming in November of last year. So they surveyed 1,000 of these Trump voters and found that a majority, 54% of them, said that they feel more loyalty to Donald Trump than to the Republican Party. And they also said that if Trump formed a third party, 46% would support that party. And this is the most concerning to me. Nearly 6 in 10 voters, which is 58% of Trump voters, not all voters, 58% of Trump voters, have said and believe that the January 6th storming of the Capitol was mostly an Antifa-inspired attack that only involved a few Trump supporters. This despite no evidence supporting that claim. Just 4% said it was an attempted coup inspired by Trump. So that's 58%. And just to put some numbers there, Ulester, so that comes out to... let's see, 42 million people that think Antifa inspired or that Antifa was the one that perpetrated the acts on January the 6th. Now, this is 12% of Americans' population and 16.3% of America's voting population. Certainly not a majority, but that's a lot of people. So how do we deal with this? I mean, when we can't even agree on basic facts. And I guess I should start by saying I called you up and we had a phone call about this where I was like, let's talk about how we can do this. And tell me what your initial reaction was to even the idea of thinking about how to talk with someone who believes this way.
You know what? I actually do not remember, Greg. Maybe it's just because it's still early in the day, relatively speaking. My brain is still waking up. Do you have a recall? I do not remember what my
you were reluctant. You were reluctant. You're like, I don't know that I want to talk to these people, which is unusual for you, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, so I can pick up on that idea where you asking specific questions about those stats, or I think there was a question that followed. Would you repeat it, or tell me where you want me to go?
Yeah, I'm just asking you, I guess I'll just would just say to you, how do you deal with something like that? How do you apply, or is it even possible to bridge the gap when you have people that believe in something that's just so diametrically opposed from what you believe and what most people know to be true?
I think it is possible, and it is also very difficult. I think it may be helpful to back up a bit. And yes, I'm recalling all my reluctance to talk about this because I think it's just so hard. And it's also a fundamental belief that I have that we're not necessarily going to reach everybody. There's some people who are going to just stay where they are, they believe the attitude, and you know, no matter what you bring, they're not going to move. So I acknowledge that, and oftentimes in my personal life, I do not use a lot of my energy, my bandwidth, to try to convince some individuals to look at differently. So maybe that's what was happening with me when we had an initial conversation. But I think what makes sense to me about this is that this back up a second and think about where some of this started. It's not necessarily the very beginning, but one of the things that President Trump did, or Trump did in just general, even before he was president, is he tapped into, however, a really important unattended need that was happening with a segment of the population. Those who feel grieved, many of those who feel, and a substantial amount of them, a majority of them are white, that the country is moving into a different direction that does not include them. Listening to them, one of the things they say consistently is, he speak for us. He said what we're thinking, what we have felt. We've never had a public figure, certainly not a president, who so effectively amplify their voice. So he's tapped into that, and frankly speaking, exploited it rather than engaged in a way that really is supportive, in a way that allows them to, you know, to get to where they want to get, whatever their concerns were. He just exploited it to his benefit to advance his own personal agenda. Frankly speaking, this man has and still doesn't have any real interest in the lives, the struggles that many of his supporters are experiencing. Economic is, you know, concerns, even concerns around race and their place in an America that is becoming more black and brown. I mean, those are real concerns for them. So that backdrop, when you add to it then an election where he promised that he would be reelected and set it up really early. You know, this is how this guy is something else. Set it up really early because he anticipated that there's a good chance he would lose. He began months earlier to anticipate that loss by saying, hey, the only way I can lose is if the elections, you know, are rigged, the election is rigged. It has to be. There's no way I can do it. And he pounded that over and over again, you know, planting the doubt in his supporters, and they begin to believe it because, again, keep in mind now, he is attending to their concerns. He is validating some very basic human needs, validating, right, listening to them, telling them they're great, everything. And he made the connection, bonded with them. We can't underestimate the power of that level of validation. And so when he actually lost the election, he already had them right there to believe that, hey, this must have been rigged.
Exactly.
And for them to think otherwise would be the dissonance emotionally, psychologically, and otherwise. They did not have the infrastructure to process the idea that he really did lose. And so the investment in hanging on to that information and the continued social media, alternative media, all the stuff that they listened to reinforcing it, you know, Rush Limbaugh, Fox News, everything was telling them exactly what President Trump was saying. So the investment in believing that makes sense to me.
And I realized that, I kind of began this by talking about, you know, how do we deal with this issue? And I appreciate the fact that you wanted to start where this came from. But even before we get to how to resolve it, I'm curious as a therapist, as a psychotherapist, mm-hmm. if you could speak a little bit more about this investment in believing this reality and how difficult it is to divorce yourself from this belief system once you bought into it. What is it about it? Why is it so difficult to change your belief system as it relates to something that really is relatively recent? I mean, you know, he's been around for about 4 years now and, you know, fomenting this, but mm-hmm. why is it so difficult for people to move away from it?
Because it's an internal psychological disruption. It means you would have to adjust your worldview, right? To think differently that, oh my God, these black and brown people aren't really the danger that I was told they represent for my future in this country, that there's still a place for me. I think it would mean an actual reorganizing internally of their own psychology to believe that the danger that he stoked and all the things that he said are not true. And what is required then for it just require a different kind of thinking and therefore behaving differently. And I think it's too much to be in such a short time to begin to change their worldview. It is much, much easier, you know, to process, hold on to what they believe than to change the belief and have to behave differently. You know, there's a saying I heard a long time ago in this work, you know, that, you know, a familiar hell is much more comforting than an unknown heaven. And my take on what that means is we are wired for confirmation bias. Whatever our beliefs and attitude, and somebody comes and confirm what we already believe, you know, think and how we behave, it's much, much easier to deal with than this internal disruption of a different view that is such contrast to what we believe already. If I think, for example, and many of his supporters believe it, not all, that white, you know, that whites are superior and that these black and brown folks are a threat to their own survival, what does it mean to give up the belief, you know, that indeed we are superior and these folks are a threat to our own survival? Who will I be? What would I be, you know, if I were to give up that lie, you know, those concerns? It's too much. And there isn't any support for what it would look like to think and behave differently. So it's too much. It's a lot.
The unknown is just extremely scary. What I hear you saying. There's also a little bit of the path of least resistance is what we tend to go for as human beings. So it sounds like a lot of work. The other thing that comes to my mind is, you know, we are very siloed in this country right now. We live, work, play with people that think just like right. we do. And mm-hmm. if we were to, if you take somebody who is a, you know, an avid Trump supporter and you, and they decide that this was a lie and that this is not the way that they believe anymore, you're looking at, they're looking at changing, their community. They're looking at changing who their friends are. They're looking at changing who they spend time with on a daily mm-hmm. basis, perhaps. Mm-hmm. And that does sound extremely difficult. And when it's so easy to just listen to those crooks and crannies of the internet, and some of them that aren't so crook and cranny, people that are just right out there, like Sean Hannity. I mean, I can turn on the Patriot Channel anytime I want to and hear some of these lies. I mean, you could watch Donald Trump's speech at CPAC over the weekend, where it went on for more than 90 minutes. And he repeated his attack on mail-in voting and claiming that dead people voted in the election. Tens of millions mm-hmm. of ballots. Where are they coming from? He says, they're coming from all over the place. Dead people are voting. You know, which is there's no proof of this whatsoever. But, you know, so I can see why, you know, given how difficult it would be to change and how easy it is just to continue your daily diet of it. Although I would imagine it would be pretty upsetting to live in a country where you think the election was stolen. You know, that would be tough.
Yeah. Yeah, he exploited an opening again. There was an opening that was already there for many of his supporters, and he got it again, just tap in there, exploit it, and continue to provide the information to solidify his point of view. We can't underestimate the power of being in an echo chamber. I think we're wired for, we're tribal. And, you know, if I'm thinking, hey, these folks are a threat, and that's my baseline, and you got somebody with, you know, a position of power come by to amplify that and affirm that, man, it feels good. He is affirming a foundation, fundamental belief that many of his supporters have, and it's going to be very, very difficult to change. And that takes me back to part of your intro around the Imago dialogue. I mean, ideally, for example, in that dialogue, one of the premises is that you really need to be open to hear a different experience, a different reality, right? And when you, for example, with couples, I mean, many of us who are in relationship or have been in relationships, I'm sure can relate to that, where you're talking about the same issue, right? Let's say it could be the election. Hey, there are couples who, you know, who are very different in their political views. So let's use it in couplehood then, the whole idea of the politics. Let's say you have one of the couples supports Donald Trump, and they say, yeah, the election is stolen, da da da. The other person supports, you know, President Biden, and say, no, it's not. The idea here is that each person would really suspend for a period of time their not change their beliefs about the election per se, but genuinely position themselves emotionally, psychologically, and otherwise to hear the experience of the other. So it's a tell me more why you think or what you're thinking about when you said the election was stolen. And that even though the Biden supporter really thinks that is just hogwash, there's no evidence to support it, the dialogue really requires that you really just generally say, okay, maybe there's something I am missing. Let me just hear this person's reality. And the idea is that their reality is just as valid for them as it is for me. And it's kind of hard to imagine, like, no, hey, the sun is shining. No, it's not. Facts are facts. You know, evidence is evidence. Yes, but even when evidence is evidence, still stay open to hearing the other's point of view. And it's not about whether or not you would agree with it or disagree with it. It's just to say, all right, I hear you. This is your experience. That's your understanding of the election. And hopefully the other person does the same thing. So then ideally what comes out of that is each person has an improved understanding of the other's reality about the election. They may never see eye to eye, However, if each one of them comes out of that experience feeling heard, understood, that that's the kind of foundation that is critical for possible change. You can't try to, quote unquote, change somebody's mind or get them to see the light if you don't meet them where they are. If you start out, man, that's just BS. That's just whatever, whatever, your point of view. Then it's become competitive and win-lose, and it goes nowhere if the interest is really improving, understanding, and moving forward together. So that's the strength of the dialogue, and I think it has it could be quite useful in all the discord that is coming across it. But, hey, it requires that we come together, right, in some spaces where that kind of conversation is possible, and usually we're so, you know, isolated in our echo chambers that seldom that is the case.
Yeah, and it's interesting to me, this idea of believing in an alternative reality. I mean, it's always been there. There's always been people that, you know, there's still people that believe the earth is flat. You know, there's people that believe that we've never been to the moon. You know, I mean, when you have, you know, whatever the number, however many billions of people there are on the earth, I mean, you're going to have somebody somewhere that's going to believe something, you know, like every possible idea that could ever exist, no matter how crazy that sounds, you're going to have at least one person who believes it. So, but what makes it so that it's been around forever, but I think with the advent of social media, it's anybody can have, you know, a microphone and scream to everybody in the world. And the more sensational it is, the more people listen. You know, it's just human nature. And so we're able to affect belief systems. And as you said, I think Trump has taken advantage of this in a way that wasn't so easily done years ago. You know, when I was growing up, there was three news stations, you know?
Right.
And if it didn't make it on the news, then, you know, we didn't know about it, and it wasn't necessarily, you know, whatever they said, I believed whatever Walter Cronkite said, you know, and maybe there's something wrong with that. But now we've gone in the other direction to where, you know, from what I can tell, there's no such thing as truth anymore. You know, my brother, he doesn't watch news anymore. He told me that he just can't watch it anymore. But what's interesting, Lester, is right after the riots, I called him up and I said, you know, they're rioting now. And he didn't even know because he wasn't paying attention to the news. The next time I spoke to him, he asked me, you know, is it true that Antifa is the one that inspired that? And I was like, well, I thought you weren't listening to the news later. And he says, well, this is what I got from my Facebook feed. You know, and I'm like, well, you are listening to the news. You're listening to the worst possible, you know, the least reliable source of news is where you're getting your news, you know. And so, but anyway.
And I jump into it.
Yeah, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that speaks to, again, to, you know, going back to, you know, what you started out this conversation with about, what are we going to do? And is this tool, the dialogue, you know, doesn't have any promise for how we can bridge the gap. This reminds me again that there are folks out there who are intentionally engaging in this kind of psychological warfare. You know, the idea that it's Antifa, right? That's not by accident. That's not just like, oh, we really think, because they want to ensure that the mass, you know, their followers believe that so that they continue their own agenda. So that's that kind of we have to bring a counter narrative to a lot of the folks who are listening, you know, the Foxes and the other, you know, outlets that are bringing that, you know, misinformation. And unfortunately, again, like you said, these folks aren't allowing themselves to be exposed to a different point of view. So a key question is, where are the opportunities for us to hear the other? Right? Where are the opportunities to hear the other? It is going to be with our friends and our families and the communities. On these smaller levels is where a lot of the hope is going to be. It's not going to be in the echo chambers of social media. It's just warfare. I know a number of folks are out there engaged in trying to do something about this, and we can start within our own relationships and within our own families, and it does, it necessarily requires the willingness to really hear the other, no matter how clear we are that the truth is the truth. Let's hear their truth as a starting point, and hopefully invite their own willingness to do the same. That's got to be where we start.
Yeah, yeah, I think
so. And I'm not saying that is easy, because, yeah, because I'm human too. And there are times I'm going, hey, you know, it's just facts are facts.
Right. But not when it comes to, not when it comes to hearing another human being and really helping them feel heard. For those of you that are just joining, we are speaking with you, Lester Douglas, psychotherapist, about how to heal the rift in this country via the use of something called the Imago Dialogue, which is used in relationship counseling. And this is Alternative Perspectives. I'm your host, Greg Bossen, and we will be right back.
Wait a minute, baby. Stay with me a while. Said you give me life, but you never told me about the fire.
Tune in to Sagebrush Boogie this Thursday, February 25th. From 8 to 10 p.m., not only will you be entertained by the eclectic mix of music gathered by host Dave Chamberlain, you will be treated to an interview with members of the Emin Park Neighborhood Association, conducted by yours truly, Kathleen Cooley, a.k.a. Katya Cool. We will share the history, the what, when, why, and how of one of Atlanta's largest and most beloved street festivals, the Emin Park Festival. That's Thursday, February 25th, on Sagebrush Boogie from 8 to 10 p.m. right here on your independent community radio station, WRFG, on the FM dial at 89.3 and on the World Wide Web at WRFG.org. You can also find us on the TuneIn app. This message was brought to you by Friends of Emin Park Incorporated.
Another public service announcement from your station for progressive information, WRFG 89.3.
All right, and we are back. You are listening to WRFG.org on your computer. It's WRFG Atlanta, 89.3 on your Radidio dial. This is Alternative Perspectives. I'm your host, Greg Bossen. It is Tuesday night, if you don't know where you are or what you're doing. And we are speaking with you, Lester Douglas, about the rift that's happening in this country, and that between those that believe in Donald Trump's reality and those that believe in your more traditional reality. And when we left, we were talking, I'm talking to you, Lester, psychotherapist, because, you know, he specializes, one of his specialties anyway, is relationship counseling. And there's a dialogue where you mirror and validate what the other person is saying, no matter how strongly you may disagree with what their facts are that they're using. You do that. You validate them. You suspend your reality so that they can feel heard and understood. So, and when we left, you were talking, Lester, about how it would be something that is needs to be done at a personal level, you know, one-on-one between your friends or your neighbors or your even your partner. But if you're in the middle of, if you're going to do a dialogue like this, I'm just kind of curious to see how it would work, you know, as an example, and what, how that would resolve anything, I guess is what people would wonder. If I'm talking to my brother and he says, you know, there were large batches of boxes of voters or votes that were reporting, that were reported late in the night or even the day after the election day, and those have to be fraud, I might know in my mind, well, these are states where you couldn't count votes until election night, And that it's actually quite normal to have these votes appear later on at the counting centers in big batches. There's nothing inherently weird about that. But I can't say that, right? When they use that as the fact of why they believe the election was stolen, I don't say that. I say that I understand how they would feel. Go ahead. I'm just wondering what would happen.
Yeah, I would say, I think you say if you're saying so. What's your brother's name?
David.
So David, you know what I'm hearing is your understanding is there were a number of large boxes of votes that were brought in, you know, later that night, and so there are some illegalities about that. Clearly, there was a problem. Whatever he's saying, and just repeat what you heard, you know, David is saying, and then check it out. Is that what you're saying, that these boxes were brought in and there were problems, da 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 da? And chances are he's saying, well, let's play. You're him. Let's do it. How about a quick
okay, yeah.
of that?
No,
yeah,
I think
you're
that's
here. You're David.
Okay. All right.
So go for it.
Yeah. So, you know, to me, it's just obvious that the election was stolen, certainly here in Atlanta. There's all these boxes that show up, you know, after the polls have closed and late in the middle of the night of the next day. Nobody has any explanation for it. You know, it's all over social media. You can just look at the videos and see they pulled that box out from underneath the table and started counting it after, you know, like at 10 or 11 o'clock after the poll watchers had left. So obviously there's something that's just wrong.
So Dave, if I get what you're saying, right, you're saying the evidence that's there that the election was stolen because there were these boxes of votes that showed up sometime after, you know, 11, and you know you saw that they were under the table, they were counted illegally. Clearly, something was illegal about this. Did I get that right?
That's right. That's right. You know, that's what
is
happened.
More
well, I mean, it's happening. It's happening all over the country. You know, that's just one example. I mean, if it was an isolated incident, sure. But, you know, people are reporting these things all over the country. There's definitely something going on here.
So you understand, you know, not only is it happening here in Atlanta Metro, it's happening all over the country. Clearly something is happening. Something is happening here. Is that right?
That's right. That's right.
Is there more you'd like to say about it? Is there more about that?
No. That's it.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you know, David, I mean, what you're saying, what makes sense to me about this is that is what a number of people are saying. That is what you're hearing in the places that you get your information. It's a position that is advanced very strongly by many of the folks whose work, you know, you believe in. So it makes sense to me that you would draw that conclusion. Because I see that too, I hear it, and if one doesn't have a different experience, a different point of view, it makes sense to me that would be the conclusion. And I know you well enough to know that you really do believe this, so your position makes sense to me.
So at this point, this is when a person, like if I was doing this with my brother, I would want to say, yeah, but look at all of these news stories that indicate otherwise.
Yeah. Right.
And that's just not going to work because whatever news story that I have, he has his own news story, right?
Exactly. So notice again, and the key here for the listeners is invalidating David and saying it makes sense to me because it makes sense to me from his point of view, not my reality. We're stepping into the other person's experience of how they saw the particular event, how they interpreted it, how they experienced it. That's his world. And I'm saying it makes sense from his world, from his worldview, not mine. And that is really hard to do when we go, man, facts are facts. Look, there's no evidence to support it. And so what we do instead, to your point, Greg, we end up arguing, going, that's not true. And he says A, and I say B, and he's back and what? It goes nowhere. it becomes harder, more difficult. We get a lot of family members, friends not talking to each other because we get into that war of right or wrong. So even when the facts are clear to us, and this would be true for David if I were talking to him too, we can have to start with a, especially if we think the other person is genuinely believe what they're saying, right? You know, if there's, is there any doubt that David really, really believes this, Greg? Does
no.
Do you have any doubt that he really believes that?
No.
Right? So if there's no doubt that that's his understanding, that's his reality, if I'm going to be in relationship with him and I'm concerned he'd be part of my community, I want to understand his world. That's the key here. That's the benefit of the dialogue is let me step into his world. And it's not going to be about whether I agree or disagree. The primary commitment here is to understand his worldview. Because I don't understand it, right? And how do we get to understand it? If we genuinely open up ourselves to listen to it. But what we do instead is it's just wrong. It's facts, case closed, and it's an argument. We're in our echo chambers looking for confirmation bias, turning to the media that supports a worldview. And the distancing continues. So that is a necessity now. After there is clear demonstration of understanding, when you do that with David, hopefully he would do the same, right, if you were using the dialogue. And then guess what? We come out of that experience with an improved, hopefully, understanding of how each other sees the same event, the election. It may not change, even point of view, but at least we have the understanding now if we want to try to move the person towards a different understanding, maybe we can offer some evidence. So, hey, I hear you, David. Here is some evidence that really, really supports why I think the elections weren't stolen. Are you willing to look at the evidence as I see it? You know, but you can't go there to try to move the person into or encourage them into thinking about it differently, and that's the goal, unless you begin with a genuine interest in hearing their point of view. It's not going to go anywhere.
I guess, and we only actually have a few more minutes here. It's amazing how time flies. But I guess what I'm wondering is, let's say that I had a dialogue like that with my brother, and he left feeling heard and understood. How will that translate in the long run to some sort of resolution? Because in my world, we can't resolve things until we agree on the facts. But that's not what we're doing here. What we're doing here is just understanding where each other's coming from. So how does that lead to healing in the long run? Is that something that just takes place over time? I mean, what are your thoughts on how that would occur? Or what would happen from that?
So what that does, again, going back to basic human needs and human psychology, is David is going to leave that experience feeling, and it's going to probably be very different from other experiences he's had because very few people are doing this, respected, right? He felt heard. We can't underestimate the power of feeling heard and when somebody shows a genuine interest isn't in understanding, because what he's getting otherwise is, that is BS, that's not fair, you're crazy, that, you know? So he's going to be more likely to be more open to hearing what you're thinking in future conversations, offering a different view because of what you just did. It is setting the foundation for David to be more open to hearing something different. Maybe the willingness to turn on MSNBC instead of Fox, right? I'm making a joke there, but he's not going to go there until he feels respected. So that's what you do. Just lay the foundation for continue to build connection and the possibility of David looking at, you know, a different point of view. He's not going to look at something different until he feels respected. That's what that does. It's like, okay, Greg is really respectful and open to me. So there's something he wants to tell me. There's something he wants to share. It might be a video, an article that you thought would be helpful. He's going to be more likely to watch it, to read it, because you respect him and respect his point of view. Again, if that's your agenda, your interest.
Well, it feels like that should be the agenda, because it feels like that's really, I mean, it's interesting that you talked about him feeling heard and feeling understood, certainly feeling heard, because I think that was a big part, just kind of going back to what you were talking about initially at the beginning of the interview, that a lot of these individual Trump supporters had not felt heard before Trump came on stage. Yes. And he spoke what they believed. And once he had them, then he could manipulate them in any way, you know, in any way that he saw fit. And at just out of curiosity here, would that be the same for a QAnon supporter that believes that the Democrats and the media and, you know, movie stars are running a child sex trafficking ring and are, you know, Hillary Clinton is eating children? I mean, this is like cult stuff. You know, I don't know if you, I don't know that that would work with somebody like that. I mean, but it's happening. There are, I mean, this is shocking, but based on a 2021 poll, this happened last month, 29% of Republicans, that's 11.5 million people, you Lester, believe the central claim of QAnon, that Donald Trump has been secretly fighting a group of sex traffickers, including prominent Democrats and Hollywood elites. 11 million people.
I know about that, right? As I said earlier, I don't think everybody is necessarily going to be reached. That everybody, you know, that everybody is necessarily going to be open to hearing a different point of view. So if we have a QAnon folks in our family, in our lives, I still think, again, this is probably one of the best, you know, tools that we have if there's going to be any hope. They have to be willing to hear another point of view, and some of them are not, no matter what you bring, but it still is the best hope that I know. Because keeping in mind, again, and I'm glad you brought this back to one of the places we started earlier, Greg, and that is Trump did versions of this dialogue, of the communalogue, if you want to call it that. He did. He listened. He understood where they were coming from. He listened. He did not, you know, he understood where they were, and he validated it. He amplified it, right?
Totally.
And then he was able to move them more and more closer to where he wanted them to be.
Yep.
That's exploitation. He did it with, you know, it was very nefarious with exploitation, but that's part of his I don't know what to call it, you know, what makes him so dangerous. He understood this kind of psychology. Yep, that's where they are. I see their concerns. Let me let them know I hear them. And that's what he said a lot. I hear you. I'm here for you. I alone can fix it. I stand for you. I believe it. Man, how about that? That all feels really good. Lots of validation and mirroring. He mirrored the hell out of them and validated, and then he go, you know, okay, now let me move you in the direction that I want you to go. He couldn't do that until he did those first two.
Yeah, well, I mean, he certainly
learned, right?
Yeah, he learned well. He learned well. Well, thank you so much for doing this, you Lester. We actually are out of time, shockingly. But I'm hoping that that we'll try this individually. I'm going to try it. I'm going to try it. But thank you so much for joining us, you Lester. And that's it. That's it for our show. We will see you next week. And take care of yourself. Wear a mask. Don't be stupid.